On the cutting edge of the new mainstream, Christine Upchurch is passionate about bringing together science, psychology, and spirituality in a way that can be applied to our everyday lives for true transformation. The Christine Upchurch Show. Stellar conversations to illuminate your journey. Engages some of the most inspired visionaries on the planet in lighthearted, lively dialogue. Join us as we explore the expansive nature of reality in a down-to-earth way, offering you insights and tools, empowering you to become that bright light you're meant to be. Now, here's your host, Christine Upchurch.
Hello, everybody. Welcome. If you're listening live, you might be listening on 1150 AM KKNW here in the Seattle area, anywhere around the world on Transformation Talk Radio, or perhaps you're listening after the fact on one of the, I think it's 90 different places this ends up, or on ChristineUpchurch.com. But wherever and whenever you're joining us from today, you're going to be so grateful because we're going to be talking about a topic that is so important to the future for a whole lot of people in this world, as well as for society at large. But before I get into that and about our exciting guest, I want to say hello to Mr. Benny Mathers, who is doing his magic with the producing over there.
Hey there, how's it going?
Good. I'm burning the candle at both ends these days, but you know.
I feel like that's this week, especially for me. I'm actually taking a couple days off here in the next few days, so it's like kind of a mad dash before I can bounce out of here. And actually, I'm going to be helping a friend of mine play in a golf tournament.
Fun.
I'm actually going to be the caddy.
All right.
Yeah, so I get to see it from that side of
where?
It's going to be down at DuPont. It's called the Home Course.
Okay, great.
And so he's won it before, and so he expects another return win, which is nice.
Fabulous.
So I get to see it all go down. It'll
be fun.
That's
great. Yeah. And I'm about to fly to New York City for a week myself.
Ooh, yeah. What's over there?
Publicity Summit.
Oh, okay.
It's work related. And speaking of work, I want to remind everybody.
Yes. Yeah, air quotes.
No.
It's just kidding.
Long days. But I want to remind everybody that on May 15th, if you happen to live in the Philly area, I will be doing a TEDx talk. And I will be talking about feeling like an outsider. And instead of looking at the pain and fear, looking at the potential benefits that come from that. Okay, got all that business out of the way, and I'm so excited about our guest today. I am talking about Johann Hari. I have to tell you, when I read an article somewhere on the internet by him and about this topic, I sent an email to our associate producer, Peggy Snow, right away. It's like, we've got to get him. This is just so important. We're going to be talking about depression today, and we're going to be talking about it from a different angle, and he's going to illuminate for us what the research is saying and what the issue really can be behind depression. So he is a New York Times best-selling author of the book Chasing the Scream, which is being adapted into a feature film. And most recently, this book that I was just talking about, Lost Connections, Uncovering the Real Causes of Depression and the Unexpected Solutions. He's a journalist. He was twice named Newspaper Journalist of the Year by Amnesty International UK. He's written for the New York Times, the LA Times, and others. And he's a regular panelist on HBO's Real Time with Bill Maher. He gave a wonderful TED Talk that I think I've watched at least twice. Everything You Think You Know About Addiction is Wrong. And I think it's had like over 20-some-odd million views, so it's a good one to watch. I'd like to welcome our guest today, Johann Hari. Hi, Johann.
Hey, Christine. It's great to be with you. Thank you.
It's so nice to have you here, and I appreciate you joining us like 8 hours later over there in London. So I'm always fascinated by what leads an author to write a particular book. And I know that, you know, you've researched addiction. You were researching the Vietnam War. Why did you start to research depression?
You know, there were these two mysteries that were really hanging over me. And I felt I needed to find the answer. The first was, I'm 39 years old. Every single year that I've been alive, depression and anxiety have increased in the United States and across the developed world.
Yeah.
I wanted to understand why. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to understand partly for a very personal reason. When I was a teenager, I'd gone to my doctor and I'd explained that I had this feeling like pain was bleeding out of me. I couldn't control it or regulate it. I felt very ashamed of it.
Mm-hmm.
And my doctor told me a story about why I felt this way. A story I now realize was really oversimplified. My doctor said, we know why people feel this way. There's doctors have shown it, scientists have proven it. There's a, a chemical called serotonin in people's brains, makes them feel good. Some people naturally lack it. You're clearly one of them. Mm-hmm. All you need to do is take these drugs and you're going to feel better. So I was given an antidepressant called Paxil, and I did feel a really significant boost in the first few months. And then this feeling of pain started to bleed back through. So I went back to my doctor. My doctor said, clearly I didn't give you a high enough dose. Mm. He gave me a higher dose. I took a high dose. Again, I felt a boost, a real boost. Again, this feeling of pain came back, and I was really in this cycle until for 13 years I was taking the maximum possible dose. I was still depressed, and wow, I was having all sorts of horrible side effects. So I wanted to understand, well, what's going on here, right? Why? It seemed to me, not at least partly, you know, if it's just a problem inside people's brains, why is it rising so much? It seemed to me intuitively there must be something not right in what doctor was telling me. So I decided to go on this big journey for the book. We're talking about lost connections. I ended up traveling over 40,000 miles. I wanted to sit with the leading experts in the world about what causes depression and anxiety and what solves them. And people who just have very different perspectives, from an Amish village in Indiana, because the Amish have very low levels of depression, to a city in Brazil that banned advertising to see if that would make people feel better.
Oh, wow.
To a lab in Baltimore where they were giving people magic mushrooms to see if that would make them feel better. And I discovered many things. But to me, the core of what I discovered is, until I went to my doctor when I was a teenager, I thought my depression was all in my head, meaning I was just weak, I needed to man up. And then for the next 13 years, I thought my depression was all in my head, meaning it was a chemical imbalance in my brain. But what I actually learned is that there are real biological factors that can make you more sensitive to depression and anxiety, like your genes. But actually, I learned that there's 9 causes of depression and anxiety for which there's scientific evidence. 2 of them are biological, but most of them are not biological.
Which is really
interesting. They are factors in the way we live. Yeah.
And so I think that many people do blame themselves for not being able to pull themselves out of depression. And I can't tell you how many articles I have read, and I've heard this from various people who've been on antidepressants, that second theory, that the one that the doctors gave you, that it's really just a chemical imbalance in the brain that needs to be adjusted, tweaked, and medication will take care of it. And so I think that second piece is where society is right now, generally speaking, accepting that if you're depressed and you don't sort of jog yourself out of it, or maybe even with the help of a little bit of therapy, then you need antidepressants, and that will solve the problem.
Yeah, chemical antidepressants have a real role to play. I'm not opposed to them. But we need to have a sensible and nuanced conversation about them. Mm-hmm. And then we need to talk about the much wider range of solutions that I've seen working all over the world. So when it comes to chemical antidepressants, it was kind of shocking to me to discover, this doesn't mean the drugs have no value, they have some value, but that story is not true. The leading expert at Princeton University, Professor Andrew Scull, says, these were his words, "It's deeply misleading and unscientific to say depression is just caused by low serotonin." Dr. David Healy, one of the leading experts in Europe, said, "You can't even say that story's been discredited because it was never credited. There was never a time when half of the scientists in the field believed it. The reason we've been told that is because it was a story that drug company PR saw would be a very good way to sell these drugs." Yes. Now, the real role of chemical antidepressants, which is not, it's important to say it's not nothing, we can measure. So there's something, depression is measured by something called the Hamilton scale. I've always felt really sorry for whoever Hamilton was, that we only remember him by how miserable we all are. But anyway, the Hamilton scale goes from 1, where you would be dancing around in joy, to 51, where you would be acutely suicidal. Uh-huh. And to give you a sense of what movement on the Hamilton scale looks like, if you improve your sleep patterns, you will gain about 6 points on the Hamilton scale. And if your sleep patterns deteriorate, like when you have a baby, you'll generally lose 6 points on the Hamilton scale. Uh-huh. So the leading expert at Harvard Medical School did the most detailed analysis we have of the real effects of chemical antidepressants, looking at the studies the pharmaceutical companies didn't release to the public as well as the ones they did. And what he found is the average movement on the Hamilton scale is 1.8 points. Now, it's important to say a few things about that. That's an average. So some people will get more. I got more initially and over time got less. Mm-hmm. It's important to say 1.8 points is not nothing, right? You can see how if you're in acute pain, 1.8 points is worth having. But you can also see that's not solving the problem for most people. It's taking the edge off for some people, and that has real value.
And as a former research statistician myself, I know that, you know, I'd question whether that was actually statistically significant. Is 1.8 points, you know, depending on how they combine the studies.
Yeah, it's a legitimate debate, and there's a lot of scientists on both sides about this. But to me, there was a moment, there were so many moments when, you know, obviously I was learning a lot from experts when I was writing Lost Connections, but there were moments when things emotionally fell into place for me. And one of them was, I went to interview this South African psychiatrist called Dr. Derek Summerfield, who happened to be in Cambodia when chemical antidepressants were first introduced to that country. And the local doctors, the Cambodian doctors, didn't know what these drugs were. So he explained.
Right.
And they said to him, oh, we don't need them. We've already got antidepressants. And he said, what do you mean? He thought they were going to talk about some kind of, you know, local herbal remedy or something.
Right, right.
Instead, they told him a story. There was a farmer in their community who worked in the rice fields, and one day he stood on a landmine and he got his leg blown off.
Aww.
So they gave him an artificial limb and he went back to work in the rice fields. And, you know, apparently it's extremely painful to work underwater when you've got an artificial limb. And for obvious reasons, it was pretty traumatic to be back in these fields. The guy started to cry all day, didn't want to get out of bed, classic depression.
Right.
They said to Derek, so we gave him an antidepressant. Derek said, well, what was it? They explained that they went and sat with him. They listened to him. They realized that his pain made sense, that it was a reaction to things that were happening to him. They figured if they bought him a cow, he could become a dairy farmer. He wouldn't be in this situation that was causing him so much distress.
Right.
So they bought him a cow. Within a couple of weeks, his crying stopped. Within a month, his depression was gone. They said to Derek, so you see, doctor, that cow, that was an antidepressant. That's what you mean, right? Now, if you've been raised to think about depression the way we have, that it's just an internal problem in the brain, that makes no sense. Imagine I went to my doctor for an antidepressant. He gave me a cow, right? Sounds like a joke. But what those Cambodian doctors knew intuitively is what the leading medical experts in the world, people like the World Health Organization, have been trying to tell us for years. If you're depressed, if you're anxious, you're not broken, you're not crazy, your pain makes sense. It is a response to things that are happening around us. It is a natural human response. And what you need is love and support to get. Everyone listening to this show knows that they have natural physical needs. Obviously, you need food, you need water, you need shelter, you need clean air. If I took them away from you, you'd be in real trouble real fast. But there's equally strong evidence that human beings have natural psychological needs.
Yes.
You need to feel you belong. You need to feel your life has meaning and purpose. You need to feel that people see you and value you. You need to feel you've got a future that makes sense. Our culture is good at lots of things. I'm glad to be alive today. But we've been getting less and less good at meeting these deep underlying psychological needs.
Sorry, go on. We want to hear lots more about this. And actually go into these different types of underlying causes and what your proposed solutions are. But we have to go to a quick break. So more with Johan Hari here in just a few moments.
Just believe another day. Just breathe.
The preceding audio was via a Skype call.
Please join us for a transformational conference with five, that's right, five of the leading pioneers in the fields of science and spirituality, all in one place. Join best-selling authors and teachers Greg Braden, Dr. Bruce Lipton, Lynn McTaggart, Dr. Joe Dispenza, and Lee Carroll in both individual workshops as well as a weekend of keynote presentations and panel discussions. At this extraordinary event, you'll get to experience some of the brightest leaders of our world today, empowering you with groundbreaking new information, deep wisdom, and practical tools to transform your life. Come connect with others and expand your consciousness in beautiful Nanaimo on Vancouver Island in British Columbia, June 14th through 19th. For more information or to register for what some are expecting to be one of the best conferences of 2018, visit shalohaproductions.com. That's S-H-A-L-O-H-A productions.com. Or visit the individual speakers' websites.
Are you stuck in unhealthy habits, toxic relationships, or low self-esteem? Do you crave a life of inspiration, love, self-acceptance, and fun? Sounds like you're on the verge. On the verge to your next big thing. Join Laura Richer, host of On the Verge Radio, helping you use your breakdown for a breakthrough, overcome life's greatest challenges, and live the life you want and deserve. Tune in each month on Transformation Talk Radio or visit seattlehealinghypnosis.com for more information.
On the cutting edge of the new mainstream, Christine Upchurch is passionate about bringing together science, psychology, and spirituality in a way that can be applied to our everyday lives for true transformation. The Christine Upchurch Show, stellar conversations to illuminate your journey, engages some of the most outstanding visionaries on the planet in lively dialogue to inspire you to become that bright light you're meant to be. Join Christine every Friday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time on KKNW, AM 1150, and Transformation Talk Radio.
I'm Christine Upchurch, and this is a Stellar Reflections Minute. Years ago, when facing cancer, without any immediate treatment options, I sought healing by making various life changes. For a while, I followed a very restrictive diet. I often found myself obsessing about which foods were good and which ones were bad. Then one day, I realized I was consuming foods based on fear. Fear of not getting well. But I didn't want to make choices out of fear anymore. I decided it was far better for my immune system if I allowed myself to experience the joy that came from, say, eating frozen yogurt, than it was for me to ingest the fear that came from avoiding it. Now, instead of choosing healthy habits based on fear, I try to make choices because they feel right and ultimately bring me joy and ease. How many of your healthy habits are really based on fear? Please visit StellarReflections.com or call 425-999-9836. That's 425-999-9836.
Welcome back to the Christine Upchurch Show here on KKNW and Transformation Talk Radio. I'm talking today with Johann Hari, author of Lost Connections. Now, Johann, you just sort of touched upon some of the causes of underlying types of depression and causes. Before we get into the solutions, can you go into those into a little bit more detail?
Yeah, so I go through in Lost Connections the nine causes of depression and anxiety that I learned the scientific evidence for, and then the solutions that open up once you understand this problem differently. Because to me, one of the most problematic things about what I was told by my doctor, which is that my depression was just a problem in my brain, mm-hmm. is that what it's telling people is your pain makes no sense. It's right. Like a glitch in a computer program. That's not true. People experience these feelings for a reason. They are excruciating feelings, but they experience them for a reason. I'll give you one example. We are the loneliest society there has ever been. Mm-hmm. There's a study that asks Americans, how many close friends do you have who you could call on in a crisis? Uh-huh. And when they started doing it years ago, the most common answer was 5. Today, the most common answer is none. Right? It's not the average, but there are more people who have nobody they could turn to than any other option. And, you know, I've been thinking about this a lot recently because one of the people who taught me most about this, the world's leading expert on loneliness, was a man called Professor John Cacioppo at the University of Chicago, uh-huh. who sadly died a couple of weeks ago, which is a horrendous uh-huh. loss. But he showed many things. One is he did this really interesting work that showed for human beings, being acutely lonely is as stressful, it releases as much of the stress hormone cortisol uh-huh. as if you are punched in the face by a stranger, wow. right? Being acutely lonely is as physically bad for you as smoking 15 cigarettes a day. And one of the reasons, and he showed a huge amount of evidence for this, and one of the reasons why he said is, you know, why are you and I alive, right? One of the reasons we exist and are able to have this conversation is because our ancestors on the savannas of Africa were really good at one thing. They weren't bigger than the animals they took down. They were not faster than the animals they took down. But they were much better at banding together into groups and cooperating.
Yes.
Just like bees evolved to live in hives, humans evolved to live in tribes.
Right.
And if you think about that circumstance, if you were separated from the tribe, you would be depressed and anxious for a really good reason. You were about to be eaten. You were yeah. in terrible danger, right?
Yes.
That's the instincts we still have. But we are the first humans ever to try to live without tribes. Mm-hmm. And it's making us feel terrible. And right. what I wanted to think about was, well, what's the antidepressant for that? What's the cow for that? If you think about the story we were just talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the heroes of my book, Lost Connections, is a doctor called Sam Everington. He's a doctor in London, as you can tell from my weird Downton Abbey accent. I'm British, but I spent uh-huh. most of my time in the US. And Sam is a doctor in a poor part of East London, actually, where I lived for a long time, although sadly he was never my doctor. And Sam was really uncomfortable because he was a general practitioner. He has loads of patients coming to him with depression and anxiety. And like me, Sam is not opposed to chemical antidepressants. He thinks they have a role.
Right.
But he could just see they weren't. It wasn't solving the problem for most of his patients, right? Most of them remained depressed. And he could see that they were depressed for perfectly understandable reasons. So Sam decided to pioneer a different approach. One day, a woman came to him called Lisa Cunningham. Mm-hmm. Lisa had been shut away in her home for 7 years with crippling depression and anxiety. Wow. Sam said to Lisa, "Don't worry, I'll carry on giving you these drugs. I'm also going to prescribe something else. I'm going to prescribe for you to take part in a group." Mm-hmm. There was an area behind the doctor's surgery that was just kind of like scrubland. And he said to her, "What I want you to do is turn up a couple of times a week, meet with a group of other depressed and anxious people I'm going to turn out to, and we're going to turn this scrubland into something beautiful." Mm. The first time the group met, Lisa was literally physically sick with anxiety. Uh-huh. But several things happened. The first thing was that Lisa noticed that the group had something to talk about that wasn't how bad they felt, right? They decided they were going to learn gardening. They were going to turn this into a garden. They had something to talk about that was something other than their pain.
Sure.
They also noticed, so they started to get their fingers in the soil. They started to learn the rhythms of the seasons. There's a lot of evidence that exposure to the natural world is a really powerful antidepressant. They start to plant flowers. They start to see them grow. They also started to form a tribe. And they did what human beings do when we form tribes. They started to solve each other's problems. Uh-huh. For example, this is an extreme example. One of the people in the program was sleeping on the local public bus because he'd been made homeless. Everyone else in the group was like, "Well, of course you're depressed if you're homeless." They started pressuring the local authority to get this guy a home. They succeeded. It was the first time they'd done something for someone else in years. It made them feel great. Uh-huh. And the way Lisa put it to me, as the garden began to bloom, we began to bloom. There was a study in Norway of a very similar program, which is part of a growing body of evidence, that found it was more than twice as effective as chemical antidepressants. Uh-huh. I think for a kind of obvious reason. It was dealing with some of the reasons why they were so depressed and anxious in the first place. And this is something I saw all over the world, from Sydney to San Francisco to Sao Paulo. The places that were most effective in reducing depression and anxiety were the places that were dealing with the reasons why we're so depressed and anxious in the first place, mm-hmm. with the fact that we live in a culture, we've created a culture that for huge numbers of people is not meeting their deeper underlying needs. Mm-hmm. And that is the most, and this is important to say, this is not in place of chemical antidepressants.
Right.
This is about expanding the menu of responses to depression and anxiety, not taking anything off the menu. Chemical antidepressants will play a good role for some people, but we need to have a much deeper and more complex response because there's much deeper and more complex causes than just your brain chemistry.
Right. So it has a relationship to, for instance, what's going on in the external world or what else is going on in your internal world that can create that imbalance of brain chemistry.
That will create brain changes. Imbalance and chemical imbalance is the right way of talking about it for various complicated reasons that I can talk about if you want. But the evidence for this is that there are these external causes is overwhelming. Uh-huh. It is the position of the leading medical bodies in the world. The leading doctor for the United Nations for World Health Day last year said we need to talk less about chemical imbalances and more about power imbalances when it comes to mental illness.
Ooh,
and depression and anxiety.
That.
So I'll give you an example, and it's the hardest of the 9 causes of depression and anxiety that I write about in Lost Connections. This was the hardest one for me to research and write about, but I think it's important. And to explain it, I have to tell you a story that for a minute you're going to think, what the hell is he talking about? Why is he telling me this? What's this got to do with depression? But it led to a breakthrough in depression. So in the mid-1980s, there was a doctor in San Diego called Dr. Vincent Felitti, who was asked by one of the big not-for-profit medical providers, Kaiser Permanente, to do a really difficult job. So they had, like all over the U.S. at that time, a really big and growing obesity crisis. Uh-huh. And they were trying loads of things like, giving people free exercise classes, giving them nutritional advice. Nothing was making much of a difference. So they said to Dr. Felitti, they gave him quite a big budget, and they said, just do blue skies research, figure out what the hell we do about this, right? Mm-hmm. So he started working with 250 extremely obese people, people who weighed more than 400 pounds.
Wow.
And yeah, and people who tried every kind of help, and they were, it's like the last chance saloon, right?
Sure.
And he's working with them. And one day he has an idea that kind of sounds a bit stupid when you hear it, which is he thought, well, what would happen if they literally just stopped eating and we gave them like the nutritional supplements so they didn't get things like scurvy, mm-hmm. would they just burn through the fat stores in their body, right? Uh-huh. So he starts doing this, obviously, with loads of medical supervision. Sure. And in one way, crazily, it worked. People lost loads of weight. A woman who I'm going to call Susan to protect her medical confidentiality went down from 400 pounds to 138 pounds. You know that show, The Biggest Loser? It was a bit like that, right? Really drastic weight loss, and people are celebrating. And then one day something happened that no one expected. Susan freaked out, started massively eating KFC or whatever it was, uh-huh. and pretty soon is back at a really dangerous weight. So Vincent called in Susan and he said, Susan, what happened? She looked down. She said, I don't know. Mm-hmm. And he said, well, tell me about the day that you cracked and started, compulsively eating again. What happened that day? Turned out something had happened to her that day that had not happened to her the whole time she'd been obese. A man had hit on her, uh-huh. not in a predatory way or anything, but a man had expressed sexual interest in her. Right. It had really freaked her out. She started obsessively eating. Vincent said to her, when did you start to put on weight? In Susan's case, it was when she was 10. He said, well, mm-hmm. did anything happen when you were 10 that didn't happen when you were 8, didn't happen when you were 12? Is there anything? And she looked down and she said, well, that's when my grandfather started to rape me. Mm. Vincent started interviewing everyone in the program. He discovered that 55% of them had put on their extreme weight in the wake of being sexually abused.
Wow.
55% is obviously much bigger than the proportion of the general population who'd been sexually abused.
And in terms of the statistics for the general population, it's between 20 to 25% of females and 10% of males up to age 18.
Yeah, so that's still a horrifyingly large number, but obviously it was much higher with people with extreme obesity. And he started to wonder if this thing that seems like a pathology, and in one way is obviously very dangerous for your health, uh-huh. was actually for some people performing a function. Mm-hmm. It was protecting them from sexual attention. So he put this to Susan and she said to him, overweight is overlooked and that's what I need to be.
Wow.
But this was a relatively small program. So Dr. Felidi started to do a much more, he got funding from the CDC, the Center for Disease Control, to do a much bigger program. And this is where it led to a really important breakthrough in understanding depression. So anyone who came to Kaiser Permanente for healthcare of any kind, from migraines to broken leg to schizophrenia, was given a questionnaire and it had two parts. The first part asked, did any of these bad things happen to you when you were a kid? Things like physical abuse, sexual abuse. Mm-hmm. The second part asked, have you had any of these problems as an adult? Things like obesity, addiction. And at the last minute, they added depression and suicide attempts. Mm-hmm. And when they added it up at the CDC, I mean, people were just astonished. For every category of childhood trauma that you had, you were 2 to 4 times more likely to become depressed. If you had 6 of those categories, you were 3,100% more likely to have attempted suicide as an adult.
Wow.
You don't get figures like that very often. And I think there's many things going on there, but it fits with this wider body of research, which is that shame destroys people, right?
Mm-hmm.
That I found this very difficult because I remember when I went to meet Dr. Felidi in San Diego the first time, and he's a wonderful and admirable person, absolutely raging when I left him. I'm thinking, why am I so angry with this man?
Mm-hmm.
And I think it helps me to understand why I had stayed so committed for so many years to this idea that depression is just a chemical imbalance in your brain. Because, when I was a child, I had experienced some very extreme acts from an adult in my life.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't want to think about that.
Yeah.
I didn't want to think that still had power over me. I didn't want to think that still played out in my life. And I felt tremendously angry at being made to integrate this into how I thought about myself and these feelings like depression. But one of the reasons I'm really glad I did stay with this is because of what Dr. Felidi discovered next.
Okay, hold that thought. We've got to go to another quick break. Stay tuned, folks.
This is Peggy Snow, practitioner at Stellar Reflections, with a Stellar Reflections Minute. So many people these days are trying to find ways to relieve their stress. What happens to our breathing when we're feeling overwhelmed and stress? When we tune in, we realize that we're either holding our breath or taking very shallow breath. To signal the body that all is well, which most of the time it is, sometimes all that is needed is a nice, deep breath to break the cycle. First, exhale to get all the stale air out by engaging the abdominal muscles and blowing gently. Next, take a nice full breath in, feeling it fill your body all the way down to your hips. Release fully and enjoy the freedom of movement. Notice how your body feels. Do you feel refreshed? Calmness is only a breath away. This has been a Stellar Reflections Minute. For more information about what we offer at Stellar Reflections, visit us at stellarreflections.com or call 425-999-9836. That's 425-999-9836.
Let It Go Radio. The future awaits you. Tune in each month on Transformation Talk Radio as host Barbara Scheidegger explores the way to clarity, peace, and how to live a successful life on your terms by turning negative experiences into positive ones. Barbara's curiosity about the human experience drives her both personally and professionally. As a life coach, author, and renowned clinical hypnotherapist, Barbara knows how to move forward in a natural, organic way without side effects. If you want to grow, be sure to tune in to Let It Go Radio. To learn more, visit letitgohypnosis.com. Defining success and putting minds to work. With the Higher Learners Career and Leadership Series, Rudy Racine will help you craft your personal definition of success, offering support and guidance as you move forward towards your goals. Take the leap. With the right mix of focus and motivation, anything can be achieved. Tune in every first and third Monday at 12 p.m. Pacific, 3 Eastern, and for more information on Rudy Racine and Higher Learners, visit Rudy's site at higherlearners.com. That's H-I-R-E learners.com.
Conscious Confidence Radio, a timeless wisdom with Sarah Maine. Tune in each month on Transformation Talk Radio and join Sarah on an adventurous journey to the deeper level of meaning to move beyond today's world of constant change, confusion, and uncertainty beyond the shadow of fear. This hit show explores key concepts such as confidence, values, and attitude in a dynamic way. To learn more about Sarah and her work, visit sarahmaine.com.
On the cutting edge of the new mainstream, Christine Upchurch is passionate about bringing together science, psychology, and spirituality in a way that can be applied to our everyday lives for true transformation. The Christine Upchurch Show, stellar conversations to illuminate your journey, engages some of the most outstanding visionaries on the planet in lively dialogue to inspire you to become that bright light you're meant to be. Join Christine every Friday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time on KKNW, AM 1150, and Transformation Talk Radio.
And I've got students to voice in, and I've got news for rejoicing. Now a new sun is rising, I count my blessing.
Welcome back to the Christine Upchurch Show here on KKNW and Transformation Talk Radio. Oh my goodness, I'm so glad you've tuned in today, because we are talking to Johann Hari, the author of Lost Connections, and we are talking about a subject that affects so many people, and this is a great take. It's like a new perspective. Okay, Johann. All right, so if there are some issues associated with us being tribal and not having those kinds of connections, in that experiment with the doctor down in California, that's fabulous, but how do we as individuals in our lives sort of extend that to our own personal situations, to becoming more connected with our tribe?
Well, I think there's a huge range of things, but I go through 7 different kinds of solutions for which I found evidence. But I want to be honest, most of the changes can't happen just as isolated individuals. Most of the changes come when we as isolated individuals team up with other people. That actually, if you remain an isolated individual, you know, thinking that life is about money and status, screaming at people through screens, mm-hmm. Trapped in work that you know that is really difficult, or the odds are you will remain depressed and anxious.
Right.
And part of what Lost Connections is about is explaining to people that their depression and anxiety makes sense, and that together we need to change the way we're living, because it is causing a lot of these problems. It's not the only cause, but it's causing these problems. So I'll give you an example. I noticed that lots of the people I know who are depressed and anxious, their depression and anxiety focuses around their work. Mm-hmm. So start to look at, what's the evidence about how we feel about our jobs? Gallup, the opinion poll company, did a really big detailed study of this. They found 13% of us, 13%, like our jobs most of the time. Okay. 63% of us are what they called sleep working. So you don't like your job, you don't hate your job, you just kind of tolerate it.
Oh my God.
And 24% of people hate their jobs and fear them. So I'm kind of quite struck by that.
Like, so
that
87% means of the people really aren't crazy about their jobs or hate it.
They don't like the thing they're doing most of their waking lives.
Oh.
And I started to think, well, could that have some relationship to the fact that we've got so much depression and anxiety, right? Mm-hmm. So I started to look for evidence about this. And I discovered that there's an amazing Australian social scientist who I got to know called Professor Michael Marmot, who discovered in the 1970s the biggest factor that causes depression and anxiety at work. It's not the only one, but the biggest factor. Uh-huh. If you go to work tomorrow morning and you are controlled, so you have low or no autonomy over your work, you are much more likely to become depressed. You're actually much more likely even to die of a stress-related heart attack. And it comes back to what we were saying before about how people have needs, right? Uh-huh. You need to feel your life has meaning. And if you're controlled all the time, it disrupts your ability to make meaning out of your work. But when I first learned all this, I misunderstood it. I thought that what Professor Marmot was saying is, okay, you've got these 13% of elite people at the top who get to have nice lives, and they're going to be fine. And then you've got the other 87% who are condemned to these miserable control jobs. And I thought about, you know, my dad is a bus driver. Mm-hmm. My mother worked in a shelter for victims of domestic violence. My brother's a delivery guy. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I thought, well, are you saying they're just and Professor Marmot said to me, no, Johan, you don't understand. It's not the work that makes you depressed. It's being controlled at work. And it turns out there is an antidepressant for that. Now, when I describe it, a lot of people are going to think, well, wait a minute, I can't do that.
Uh-huh.
And I'm not saying we all as individuals can do that now. I'm saying we can change our culture so far more of us can do it. So in very specific way that I'll explain. But so I went to Baltimore to interview this person called Meredith Keough. Meredith used to go to bed every Sunday night just sick with anxiety. She had an office job. As she would tell you, it wasn't the worst office job in the world. She wasn't being bullied or harassed or anything.
Uh-huh.
But it was pretty monotonous, and she couldn't bear the thought this was going to be the next 40 years of her life. So one day with her husband, Josh, Meredith did something quite bold. Josh had worked in bike stores since he was a teenager.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, bike stores are pretty, it's insecure, pretty controlled work, as you can imagine. Sure. And one day Josh and his colleagues in this bike store had asked themselves, what does our boss actually do? Right? It's not that their boss wasn't a particularly bad person. They liked mm-hmm. him. But they were like, we seem to fix all the bikes and he seems to make all the money.
Uh-huh.
So they decided they were going to do something different. They were going to set up a bike store of their own, but it was going to run on a different principle. The previous bike store they worked in was a corporation. Most of the people listening to this show will work for corporations. Mm-hmm. So it's top down. It's like an army. You do what the boss at the top says.
Sure.
What they decided to do was set up a bike store that worked in a different way, an older American ideal. It's a democratic cooperative. So that means there's no boss. They take the big decisions together by voting. They share out the good tasks and the boring tasks, so no one gets stuck with the boring tasks. They obviously share out all the profits.
Sure.
And one of the things that was so fascinating going and spending time at their business, it's called Baltimore Bicycle Works, it's very successful, is how many of them talked about how they'd been depressed and anxious before when they'd worked in this controlled environment,
uh-huh.
but were not depressed and anxious in this different way of living, which is totally in line with Professor Marmot's findings. Now, it's important to say, it's not like they quit their jobs fixing bikes and went uh-huh. off to be like, I don't know, Beyonce's backing singers, right?
Sure.
They fixed bikes before, they fixed bikes now.
Uh-huh.
What changed is they were given control over their work. And think about how many people you know who are depressed and anxious at the moment who would feel really different if they knew that tomorrow they were going into a workplace that they controlled with their colleagues,
uh-huh.
where if there has to be a boss, he's elected by them and accountable to them, where they could share out the good tasks and the less good tasks, where they had collective control over their environment. That would be a very different way of living. But there's no reason why our society has to run in this way with a system that makes us so depressed and anxious. We could change every corporation into a democratic cooperative. Uh-huh. Now, that's a long-term goal. But, you know, the weekend was a long-term goal when it was first proposed, right?
Sure,
I mean, it was
sure.
a radical, crazy idea
it was.
When it was first proposed, you know? So I think what I go through in my book, Lost Connections, are some short-term solutions, some things that people can do as individuals, some big long-term goals that will deal with the deeper causes of this crisis. But to do all this, we have to have a different conversation about what depression is. If we're stuck at being told, it's just a problem with your brain chemistry.
Uh-huh.
There are real things that happen in your brain when you become depressed, and I write about them in Lost Connections. It's important to understand them. But that's one part of a much bigger picture. We have to understand all the parts of the picture, mm-hmm. and we have to act on the insights. Because what we've been doing up to now is when people are depressed and anxious, we have been pathologizing that.
Mm-hmm.
We've been saying it's a sign of craziness in them, a set of misfiring chemicals inside their skull. And what I'm trying to explain in Lost Connections, which is based on, you know, interviewing the leading experts and scientific experts in the world on this, is that instead of pathologizing these signals, we should be listening to them.
Yes.
We should be honoring them. You know, one of the things, as you could tell, I'm you know, I'm a European, although I spent a lot of time in the US. And, you know, I remember first time, when I was in my early 20s in the US, being surprised at the existence of indigestion pills. Because, like, Pepto-Bismol, no such thing exists in Europe. You can't buy them anywhere in Europe.
Really?
And I remember, no, they don't. They just don't exist. Uh-huh. And I remember, oh, I've never seen them in any pharmacy or anything. And I remember explaining to an American friend of mine when he first offered me one, said, but wait a minute, indigestion isn't a malfunction, right? That's your body telling you you're eating too fast. You need to slow down because, you know, otherwise you'll get sick, right?
Or eating the wrong foods or whatever. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. It's
information. You don't want to get rid of that signal. You want to listen to it. Now, that's a kind of trivial example. Obviously, depression is infinitely more, it's the worst thing I've ever been through. It's infinitely more agonizing than indigestion. But I think the same principle holds, except for the whole society, right? Instead of listening to that signal, we've been trying to just pathologize it, say it's a sign of madness, and kind of drug it into submission. Mm-hmm. Now, the drugs do have some role, but that's not how we should be approaching this. I mean, you know, think about it. One in five Americans will take a psychiatric drug in their lifetime. Uh-huh. One in three middle-aged women in the United States will take an antidepressant in any given year.
Oh,
it
my
is rising
gosh. Oh,
every
one
year.
In three.
Right?
Oh, holy crap.
So, yeah, you think about that.
Whoa.
That's a signal that something's going wrong,
yes,
right?
Something's
and if
broken.
All we do is we just say, oh, it's, you know, these people have just gone crazy, or, you know, they just need, they, or even we're more empathetic and we go, oh, well, they've just got a brain disease that needs, you know, a little bit of therapy and some drugs. And I'm not dismissing either of those. They both have value.
Right.
We're not going to get to the core of why this crisis is happening, mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
And we need to get to the core of it.
Yes. We have to go to another quick break, but stay tuned for more with Johan Harry.
The preceding audio was via a Skype call.
Have you been seeing numbers like 111 and 222 everywhere you go? Do you feel that the universe may be trying to get your attention, perhaps offering a message of some sort? As it turns out, numerical patterns and certain types of geometry form the very fabric of our reality, from cells under a microscope to the astronomy of our night sky. At Stellar Reflections, we offer special sessions which tap into these patterns, designed specifically to support you on your journey. The 111 and 222 activations are sessions activating new patterns in your energy field, which in turn can help you create new patterns in your life. After just one session with a practitioner, either in person or via distance, clients report gaining greater clarity, becoming more intuitive, and honoring their inner truth as they move forward in their lives. Curious about what these transformational sessions might do for you? Call 425-999-9836 or visit stellarreflections.com. That's stellarreflections.com. Please join us for a transformational conference with five, that's right, five of the leading pioneers in the fields of science and spirituality, all in one place. Join best-selling authors and teachers Greg Braden, Dr. Bruce Lipton, Lynn McTaggart, Dr. Joe Dispenza, and Lee Carroll in both individual workshops as well as a weekend of keynote presentations and panel discussions. At this extraordinary event, you'll get to experience some of the brightest leaders of our world today, empowering you with groundbreaking new information, deep wisdom, and practical tools to transform your life. Come connect with others and expand your consciousness in beautiful Nanaimo on Vancouver Island in British Columbia, June 14th through 19th. For more information or to register for what some are expecting to be one of the best conferences of 2018, visit shalohaproductions.com. That's S-H-A-L-O-H-A productions.com or visit the individual speakers' websites.
I'm Christine Upchurch, and this is a Stellar Reflections Minute. For centuries, spiritual traditions have talked about how humans have an energy field or aura surrounding them. Although skeptical scientists refuted this for decades, science is now beginning to catch up with spirituality. Scientists can actually measure light emanating from living beings, so they can measure the human aura. which in scientific terms is known as the biofield. Many medical practitioners around the world use an instrument to evaluate a patient's biofield for the purpose of diagnosing illness. They understand that imbalanced or insufficient light in a person's energy field indicates a physical or emotional problem. The good news? There are ways to balance and increase your light, resulting in greater well-being. For more information, please check out StellarReflections.com or call 425-999-9836. That's 425-999-9836.
Welcome back to the Christine Upchurch Show. We are talking to Johan Hari and Lost Connections. Johan, before we go any further, you know, where this hour is flying by, please share with our listeners how they can connect with you and learn more about the book.
Oh, yeah. So my publishers always tell me to say this like a little advertising spiel. I always feel terrible. But anyone who wants any more information about the book, if they want to hear what a big range of people from Hillary Clinton to Tucker Carlson to Russell Brand
and Elton John.
I've said about the book. Yeah. Elton John, yeah. Yeah. I wanted to get Elton John to form a cappella band with all those other people and sing about the book, but he didn't do it. Or if you want to hear audio interviews with lots of the experts we've been talking about, or if you want to take a quiz to see how much you know about the real causes of depression and anxiety, you can go to www.thelostconnections.com. It's www.thelostconnections.com. You can find out where to get the book, both as a physical book and an audio book.
Okay, and it's thelostconnections.com. And right as you were saying, Lost Connections, we actually
kind of lost the Skype signal for a second.
It was just
kind
of
convenient, right?
The universe has a good sense of humor. Oh, okay. So, you know, this is, I love the way you've laid out the various causes of depression. And as I read through your book, I mean, first of all, it's a fabulous book. There are plenty of statistics, plenty of wonderful, inspirational stories. And then it's like, I read that about the next one. It's like, this really makes sense. So I know you talk a lot about what's going on in a person's life, and you've talked a little bit about the connection between depression and childhood trauma. What are some of the biological connections of depression?
Yeah, so we know that there are really important aspects of our... So there's a very broad agreement among scientists. There are three kinds of cause of depression and anxiety. There's biological causes, there's psychological causes, and there's social causes, which are how we live together, our environment.
Sure.
And all three play out to some degree in all people with depression, right? To some degree, mm-hmm. maybe small, some aspects may be small for some people. So we know, think about genes, for example. We know that your genes can make you significantly more vulnerable to depression by about 30 to 40%. But it's important to say what that doesn't mean. Nobody is genetically destined to be depressed. Mm-hmm. So we all know this with food, right? I find it really easy to put on weight. Some uh-huh. people I know can eat 10 Big Macs and they don't put on any weight, right? Sure. I hate those people, obviously. But
I feel the same way about those people.
So we all know there's a natural variety in how easily or how hard it is for people to put on weight. Mm-hmm. But we also know if I don't eat any Big Macs, if I just eat salad all the time, I'm not going to put on weight, right?
Uh-huh.
So in a similar way, that mixture of biological and environmental factors plays up with something like depression. So there was a really big study in New Zealand by a guy called Professor Avshalom Kaspi. And what they – massive population study. And what they found is there was a particular gene. It's called the H5TT gene that does make you more vulnerable to becoming depressed. But – and this was really interesting – if you had that gene, the H5TT gene, uh-huh. you were only more likely to become depressed if you became really lonely or if you went through a trauma. If you didn't, you were no more likely to become depressed than anyone else.
Wow.
So again, what that shows us is the biological factors interact with these wider social and psychological factors mm-hmm. that on their own, they don't write your destiny.
Yeah,
right?
As Bruce Lipton would say, that there has to be an environmental factor to trigger that genetic expression.
Exactly. And it's important to say this because what's happened in our culture is that people have been told exclusively or heavily biological stories about their distress.
Mm-hmm.
And what that's done is it's diverted us from finding the meaning of our pain
yes.
in our lives and in our societies. And it's diverted us from finding better solutions
right.
and alongside.
And it puts us more in the victim role as opposed to the empowerment role.
Yeah, and it actually increases stigma, which may mm-hmm. sound strange, and I didn't believe that until I looked at the best research. So what we've done up to now is we've said to people, there's basically two options. Either you're weak and you need to pull yourself together, mm-hmm. or it's a totally biological problem, you know, and you shouldn't be mean to people because they've got a biological problem, right?
Right, right.
But actually, one of the things I learned is that while there are real biological factors, both those explanations are way too simplistic. It's neither just the individual's responsibility, because we didn't design our society or environment,
sure.
nor is it just your biology, although there is some biological aspect. And it's interesting. Actually, when you look at the experiments about stigma and how you reduce stigma, you try to figure out what makes people less nasty to someone. Actually, what all the evidence shows is the thing that most reduces stigma mm-hmm. is explaining that people's pain makes sense. That actually it's a response to something bad happening. Yeah. And that something bad happening might be something as extreme as sexual abuse as a child, uh-huh. or it might be something that's much more common, like being trapped in a job where you've got no control and it's unbearable,
yes.
or being acutely lonely. Or thinking one of the other causes of depression and anxiety that I write about in the book is, you know, we all know junk food has taken over our diets and made us physically sick. But there's equally strong evidence that a kind of junk values have taken over our minds and made us mentally sick. A wonderful man I interviewed a lot called Professor Tim Kasser has shown the more you think life is about money and status and how you look to other people, whether it's on Instagram or in real life, the more likely you are to become depressed and anxious. You become a kind of hollow person. I can explain why if you want, but so that's another change that's happened in our culture. We've all become much more driven by these junk values, by how we look to other people, uh-huh. and less by the inherent meaning that we find in our lives.
Right. How many likes do we have on Facebook? How many friends do we have? I mean, that kind of stuff really does get in the way of connection.
I think that's absolutely true. And actually, I wanted to think about this, the effects of social media on these questions. Mm-hmm. So I went to a place not so far from where you are. It's in near Spokane.
Uh-huh.
The first ever internet rehab center in the United States. It's a place called Restart Washington. Yeah, mm-hmm. they're great people. And I have to admit, the first thing that happened is I arrived there. It's a clearing in the woods. And I absolutely instinctively glanced at my phone and was really irritated. I couldn't check my emails. Then I was like, oh, wait, you're in the right place. You're at an internet rehab center. And it was fascinating talking to the wonderful woman who runs that center, Dr. Hilary Cash, was something she explained to me. So they get all kinds of people at that center, but they disproportionately get young men who've become obsessed with multiplayer role-player games like World of Warcraft, right?
Uh-huh, right.
And she said to me, and I spoke to a lot of these young men, she said to me, what do these young men get out of these games? They're getting the things they used to get from the culture, but they no longer get.
Oh.
They get a sense of community. Uh-huh. They get a sense of status. They get a sense that they can gain status.
Uh-huh.
They get a sense they can roam around. Today, the average child spends less time outdoors than the average maximum security prisoner, because
Whoa.
By law, a maximum security prisoner has to have 70 minutes. So they get these things. But what she said is, what they get is a kind of parody of those things, mm-hmm. right?
Right.
And the more time I spent there, I began to think, I think the relationship between social media and social life is a bit like the relationship between pornography and sex, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not against pornography. It will meet a certain basic itch. But if your entire sex life consisted of looking at pornography,
right.
you're going to go around frustrated and angry all the time because your deeper needs would not be met, right?
Yes,
you
yes.
did not evolve to look at people on a screen. You evolved to, you know, to have sex, to have conversations, to
mm-hmm.
be in physical interaction with people, to look into people's eyes.
Right.
And I think this is one of the things, in a sense, it's really important to understand when the internet arrived, right? So this is just by coincidence. It wasn't designed this way, but the internet arrives for most of us, the late 90s, early 2000s.
Sure.
When a lot of the factors that cause depression and anxiety that I write about in my book, Lost Connections, we're already supercharged, right?
Uh-huh.
There's already been a big increase in loneliness. There's already been an increase in junk values. There's
right.
already been a big increase in people being insecure about the future and feeling financially insecure. But what happens is the internet arrives and it looks a lot like the things we've lost, right? You've lost your friends, but here's some Facebook friends. You've lost status. Here's a status update. But it's not actually the things we've lost.
Right. It's like those empty calories of the French fries and the Big Macs, yes. Unfortunately, we're running out of time here. I wanted to make sure that I gave out the website again. It is thelostconnections.com, and the book is fabulous. if you know anybody with depression, if you've ever experienced depression yourself, if you want to be able to help those by having a greater perspective on it, I encourage you to read Johan's book. Thank you so much for joining us here today.
Oh, it was a total pleasure, Christine. Thank you so much to you and to your listeners.
And thank you for joining us here today. I look forward to talking to you again soon.
You've been listening to the Christine Upchurch Show, stellar conversations to illuminate your journey. Each week, this show engages some of the most outstanding visionaries on the planet in lively dialogue to inspire you to become that bright light you're meant to be. Join Christine every Friday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time on KKNW, AM 1150, and TransformationTalkRadio.com. For more information about the transformative healing work of Christine, visit www.stellarreflections.com. And for weekly topics, visit www.transformationtalkradio.com.
The preceding audio was via a Skype call.